Good morning, everyone. It is 9 o'clock and we're going to begin the meeting. Mr. Kilroy, will you please call roll?
Thank you. Chair McAdoo.
Here.
Vice Chair Carvalho.
Here.
Regent Ariscotta.
There.
Regent Boylan.
Aye.
Regent Brooks, thank you.
Here.
Regent Carter. Regent Carter. Regent Del Carlo.
Here.
Regent Dr. Del Bravo. Regent Geddes.
Here.
Regent McMichael.
Here.
Regent Moran.
Here.
Regent Perkins.
Here.
Regent Tarkanian. We have a quorum, ma'am.
Thank you. And if you will please rise, we will say the Pledge of Allegiance. And Vice Chair Carvalho, will you please lead us in the pledge? Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And it is always my honor and privilege to read our land acknowledgement. Before beginning, we're going to take a moment to recognize that here in Nevada, we stand on the land of the Washishu, Washoe, Numu, Northern Paiute, Nui, Western Shoshone, and Nuwu, Southern Paiute. We take a moment to recognize and honor their stewardship that continues into today. With this recognition, we state an intention to rightfully include their voice and respect them as the 27 sovereign tribal nations of Nevada. And we are ready for public comment. Is there any public comment in Elko?
There is no public comment in Elko.
Thank you. Is there any public comment in Reno?
There is no public comment in Reno. Oh, wait. Yes, there is. Sorry. Okay.
Thank you. Hi, Dr. Irvin.
Hi.
Please
Kent
state
Irvin,
your name.
Nevada Faculty.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Kent Irvin, K-E-N-T-E-R-V-I-N, Nevada Faculty Alliance, the statewide association of faculty at NC colleges and universities. We work to empower our faculty members to be fully engaged in our mission to help students succeed. On agenda item 5, I would like to give our support to the extension, the temporary extension of the faculty contract at Western Nevada College. They were a little delayed, as were the other campuses with collective bargaining units, in getting to this point. And it's important that they have a contract going forward through the through this fiscal year, and so that then they can continue to negotiate for a full contract, which we have full confidence that they will carry out. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Irvin. Is there any other public comment in Reno? Seeing none, is there any public comment here in Las Vegas? I do not see any, so we will move to agenda item number 2, and that would be a motion and approval for the minutes. Regent Del Carlo moved. Is there a second? All right. Thank you, Regent Boylan. Are there any edits, amendments to the minutes, or discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 I vote aye as well.
Aye.
The motion passes. For the board chair's report, I will just mention two recent things. I attended the University of Nevada, Reno State of the University address. and applaud you for your visionary presentation, President Sandoval. And I also was very privileged to get to attend the UNLV Foundation dinner, and all four presidents from Southern Nevada were there in support of their colleague at UNLV. And I thought that was marvelous, and it was a wonderful dinner with just a tremendous spirit with all their Palladium donors. So that would be my chair's report for today, and I will move to agenda item number 4 for the chancellor's report.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Dale Urquiaga, acting chancellor. let me begin by saying I've been under the weather for a couple days, so if I am not my usual sparkling, witty personality, I apologize. Or if I am not the personality that I aspire to, let me apologize. And I asked the chair for a little extra time on this agenda to give you sort of an update, because today is my 105th day as your acting chancellor. So Sunday was my 100-day mark. And I thought I might just give you an overview of sort of what the last 100 days have been like. And as I have said to you before, maybe perhaps signaled for you where I think we will go in the next few months anyway, as we prepare for a new calendar year. And so just to start, I think the board knows that when I came here, I came really with a first priority of stabilizing the system office and its relations with the board, and to find ways to support our member institutions. So I have spent a great deal of time in that body of work, and I have to acknowledge the system administration and system computing services staff who have really made that part of my job really very easy. You have an excellent group of people at the system office level in both of those divisions. So I think you should know that. They've been very helpful, and I'm very proud of what we've been able to do together in just 100 days. I think one of the reasons that you all consented to appoint me to this job is the second area of my work, and that is my legislative experience. I can't count perhaps how many sessions or special sessions I've been through. And so much of what I have been doing is working with your staff to prepare for the upcoming legislative session. Part of that is budgetary. Part of that is some of the policy that we know will be discussed. We're beginning to get a sense of, as I call it, what's in the water at the legislative building. And I'll be back to you with more on that in December and in January and in advance of our budget hearings. And then in talking with the chair and the vice chair over these last few weeks, I have picked up, as you know, the strategic planning work of the former chancellor, and I'm trying to both honor what was said and heard and align that in a way that isn't overreach for an acting chancellor to recommend a strategic plan when the institutional plans are already in place. And so we will have, I think, one more meeting of that committee, and then we'll have some recommendations for you on what I would call, as a strategic planning nerd, a framework rather than a full plan. But I think it's the right elevation for where we are, and it has taken some time. In the last few weeks, like the chair, I've been able to attend a number of events. And I will say that, you know, campus events are always great. My favorite meetings so far, with due respect to all of you, have been the meetings that I've held with the Nevada Student Alliance or representatives of student governments. I find them refreshing. Everything is still possible for them, and when you're me and when nothing seems possible, I just love their attitude and their ability to bring solutions when they point out a problem or a concern. And so those have been, as I suspected they would be, and as they have been in most of my career, to be around young people with proximity, they have been the sustaining meetings of the last 100 days. I think they will be through the end. The chancellor sits on the governor's economic development board. I've attended one meeting of that entity. This week, we had a meeting of the Sexual Misconduct Task Force, which is a statutorily created body. I'll bring you some more information on their behalf at a future meeting. And I have been named to a complete College America policy committee. I have not yet met with the group for the first time, but I am, as you might imagine, somewhat of a rainbow unicorn in the world of higher education because I have K-12 experience. And much of what they talk about at Complete College America is the matriculation from high school and the difference in funding formulas and things like categoricals or set-asides for students, which, as you know, does not exist in our state in higher education and is only beginning to exist in our state for K-12. So I'm excited by that work, and I always appreciate being a rainbow unicorn. I am pleased to inform the board that we received the congressionally directed funds from SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Agency. I never remember what all the letters mean. It's over a $2 million grant, which your staff applied for after congressional direction. We got the award letter at the end of September. It allows us to hire a wellness officer on federal dollars. That position lasts for a year. It directly appropriates money from this office to the institutions for a mental health first aid. And it will allow us to do a needs assessment of work. And I'm most excited by this work, I think, because I can see the need and feel the need, whether it's on my own staff or when I talk to our students. You can feel the tension with folks. And I've spoken at length, in particular with President Whitfield, about this because of his background. But I think this grant is really the start of some important work for us. And it will need to include pipeline conversations about how this system can contribute to the development of more mental and behavioral health professionals. And so I think that is also a little presage of some of the things that I'll talk with you about in a moment. Andrew Klinger and Julia Tesk and I have gone through our first government finance office hearing with the Legislative Council Bureau finance folks. As always, they ask good questions. You all know where we are in this process. The governor is currently developing GovRec, the governor's recommended budget. And so I think by this month, we'll close out the online portal requests for them, and then they begin their work. So that meeting was very positive. Less positive, perhaps, the Public Works Board met and did not list any of our requests on its recommended agenda for the coming biennium. The only item that made their list is the HECSHEC formula, and it's a statutorily required formula. I think the dollar amount is even set in statute. So it wasn't much of a gift since they had to include it, but they included it. But the other prioritized lists from the institutions and the board were not selected. Now, that's not the end of that process. The governor now will review the Public Works recommendations, and he will make his own. And sometimes in the past, governors have reached past the Public Works Board and have chosen something that was in the list. And then, of course, the legislature can continue that process as well and look further down from those projects that are submitted. And if you saw the news in morning papers about yesterday's economic forum, you know that the state will be sitting on a pile of cash for one shots. And let us remember, those are $400 million already went to the rainy day fund. But the rest of those monies, and there will be a number not unlike the number that you saw in the morning's paper for this fiscal year, those are all handled as one shot appropriations or supplemental appropriations in the late part of session. You've heard me say this before. So there may be a good deal of money for one shots. Sometimes that's good for capital construction or planning projects. So all hope is not lost there. We've been doing some work on hiring here, and I will say it's challenging. I think I hear this from the institutions as well. We've been looking in the HR world, in the public information world, in the government relations, and for a workforce development position to assist the interim vice chancellor for student academic affairs and community colleges. And most of those recruitments have been hard. Some of those recruitments, I think, will fail. We will not field candidates at the end. And so we'll have to either start over or go at that a different way. So parts of the office, I will say, are still a little short-staffed. And so I appreciate your patience with us as we work through this, just as your institutions report to you faculty hiring challenges or challenges left from the budget cuts. So hopefully more good news to come. At the last regular meeting of the board, two items came up that I thought I should report to you on in advance of December. One is the consolidation or a strategic alliance between GBC and UNR. As I promised to you that I would, I sent a long list of questions to the presidents, and the president's answers have begun to arrive. So, and I had a long conversation with President Helens on Monday, and so we will work through our questions and their answers, and we will work together between now and, I think, the December meeting. I think the presidents will come to you with some recommendation, which is theirs to tell, not mine. But I just want you to know that the presidents are indeed working with this office to have answers to your questions. Similarly, at the last board meeting, when we discussed the renaming of Nevada State College to Nevada State University, the board asked for, by President Pollard's and my count, four items specifically that we ought bring you in December when you consider that item again. And those items, in no particular order, are an in-depth review of changes to the handbook and the procedures and guidelines manual that will need to be made to effect that name change. And that review is almost complete. We'll have a sort of a memo summarizing those changes. It's done on our end. I just need to read it and share it with President Pollard so she sees it. You also asked for information from the accrediting body. And I've had two calls with President Pollard and her team, and she's had really productive conversations with the accrediting body and has received, I think, all the answers that you will need to move forward, should you choose to do so. She has shared with me their verbal comments, and it all seems to be in line. You'll get a written document as soon as she can get it from them. You asked similarly for information from the U.S. Department of Education. Some of that will actually come through the accrediting body, and so President Pollard has had those conversations, and she will lay that out for us as well. And then the fourth deliverable that you asked for was a BDR, or a bill draft request. Bill draft requests could not be written and developed in time for your review. It just takes longer than that. And so what we're talking about is an overview of what statutory changes should be made to align with the name change. So I'll be clear here. The Board of Regents has the authority to name its institutions whatever it wishes to name its institutions. And the legislature has picked up those naming conventions in an our tiered system in a number of places in the statute, everything from the Millennium Scholarship to the back language to the funding formula. And so this, I guess I would call it a trailer bill, would follow your action to be sure that all the provisions of state law align. That, we think, is a basic review. We've begun identifying all those statutes. There's a lot of them. There are some open legal questions yet that our general counsel and that of Nevada State and the Legislative Council Bureau will talk about. So that's probably the one item that is still the most open. But I remain hopeful. And again, I want to thank President Pollard for her participation. We've had a couple of meetings. We've had very open conversations. Our staffs, we all now have these giant Zoom calls where I hate to think of what the billable hour is when we're all on there. But it's an important topic, and I would represent to you that I think we're on track, and we will have for you the information that you require and that you requested of us. One thing we would ask is if more questions have arisen – Please let us know now. Don't wait to ask your question on December 1st or 2nd, whenever that item is heard, because we might not know the answer. We might have to go ask a lawyer, heaven forbid, due respect to the lawyers in the room. And so if you could signal to us what your future questions might be, that will just be helpful. It will just give us more time to do that together for that meeting. So in general, I would represent to you that all those business items, the general business that I came here to, I think, do as your acting chancellor, I think are on track. And there are a few things that have come to the surface as issues that I would like to put some emphasis on in the short time that I am with you. And there are three principally. None of them are new. None of them are things that you have not already talked about. I'm not that creative or interesting a guy. But I have spent a long time in Nevada, and I have spent a fair amount of time now with you sort of pulling together the various threads of conversations that I think are critical for where the system is today and what we will need to do to get the system ready for its new chancellor sometime next year. The first is what I would call sort of generally evidence-based policymaking. This is a personal cause celeb of mine. I wish that I had known more about evidence-based policymaking when I had some of my previous jobs. I probably would have been a better public servant. But I think we have an opportunity to create sort of a research agenda for the system of particular interest. Would, for me, of course, because of my background, is high school matriculation. It's bad data for us, the number of high school kids who move on to our institutions or any institution of higher education is just too low. I'd like to understand why. The Gates Foundation just commissioned a really interesting study about that. I think we could replicate and personalize that to Nevada. Similarly, the dual credit programs that we talk so much about, we know from the national data that dual credit works in terms of college continuance and college persistence. We'd like to know more about our programs and how they are administered differently by the R1s versus the community colleges or the state college. And so I think a longitudinal study about the efficacy, the results will come 3 years from now when I'm retired. But I think it's important that you understand, for example, that program. And then similarly, I've begun to have conversations with the Department of Employment Training and Rehabilitation and the Nevada Department of Education about a shared research agenda. What do we know about Nevadans' labor force participation? What gaps are there on their sides that are impacting us? What do we know about programs and diplomas offered in the K-12 space that might benefit us? So the first, again, you do this work. Your staff has done this work, but it's something that I will probably be spending more time on and will likely come to you to ask for money for as we launch a research agenda over these next few months. The second item is something that I know Regent Del Carlo's committee thinks a lot about in the workforce development space. She and I have had some conversations, and that is what I would sort of generally call the future of work. Our goal should be, I think, to be a system that offers Nevadans an opportunity to think about not just their next job, but their lifelong learning and their ultimate career choice, knowing that most people today are going to change jobs a lot, and that many jobs for which young people in particular will ultimately hold, they don't even exist today. And so preparation for those jobs is challenging. And so I think that relying on the good work of this board and certainly the good work of our institutions, the system office could help with some coordinating of those conversations about the future of work with our workforce development apparatus in the state. With, for me, as you know, because I think you know from whence I come, the ultimate goal should be for our state economic mobility. How will we lift people from the social class or economic class into which they were born or the demography of their zip code and move them up the ladder, if you will, as a state? I think that has implications for our research institutions as well as for our workforce institutions. This is problem solving writ large. And so it's an area that I have some experience in. And so I think you can expect that we will continue that work on your behalf. And again, we will not be doing things that I'm not telling you about. I'm just sort of signaling to you here what you might expect to hear from me. And then lastly, as I said at the ELCO meeting, and I have said once here today about the SAMHSA grant, mental health awareness are issues throughout our system, I think throughout our workplaces. And as I said to you in ELCO, they have been in my life for me. And so I will spend quite a bit of time in the mental health space. We have the SAMHSA grant as an opportunity. I've already attended one awareness event for our veterans, a suicide prevention event at TMCC, and I've begun to have talks with their service providers about some immediate relief programs that we might be able to help with or coordinate jointly. And so I think May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and so I suspect you'll hear a lot from me between now and May about mental health. The former chancellor had appointed a task force, and as you know, I inherited, I think, 9 of those, and so I'm trying to sunset them. But this task force I will sort of reconstitute in the next few weeks as a committee of the chancellor. The handbook actually directs the chancellor to establish committees, and so I think that's how I will propose to handle this, is I'll have a committee that will have a very specific deliverable or a couple of deliverables that they've already talked about, some of which align with the grant, and that it will have a terminus of a year. I don't believe in committees or task forces that live in perpetuity and get to decide, well, now we've examined this issue, and so we shall examine this other issue. I think it should be a little more directed than that. And so because I will not be here beyond what would likely be the end of that time period, I think that's how we'll handle it, is we'll set a year time frame, we'll get some specific work done, and then decide what needs to follow. So I just wanted you to know that really those 3 things, the evidence-based work, the future of work, and the mental health awareness and supports, you're probably going to hear me talk a lot about, even while I continue to try to be a stabilizing force and move business items like Nevada State and GBC across the finish line in coming meetings. And then I will circle back to, I can't emphasize enough for you how important this legislative session is, not just from a budgetary perspective because of the cuts endured during the pandemic, but I think the system has both an opportunity and a challenge to distinguish itself as a participant with the state in solving many of the problems that were laid bare during the pandemic, whether that is public health, mental health, talent pipelines, assessment in our schools. All of those things are challenges we have researchers working on, or we have faculty working on, and we have programs to assist with. And I think this could be, for us, a really defining session in terms of our role for the next 10 years, perhaps, in how we are partners with the state of Nevada. And so despite the budgetary concerns of the potential for a recession, I'm actually very excited for the session. I think the system has a lot to offer as Nevada's talent pipeline and Nevada's problem solver, and I hope that we can tell that story jointly. So, Madam Chair, I hope I have not gone too far over my time. As always, I appreciate your confidence in me and your patience with me as I sort my way through this job. I just want to thank the board again, and I really want to thank all of my staff, particularly those members of my cabinet who make it very easy for me to come to work every day. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Acting Chancellor Urquiaga. I'm going to quickly go back to agenda item 3 for my... Oh, Jason, please go ahead. I didn't see you in the queue. Thank you.
Thank you. And I just had a question, and it's not for today, but we had talked about the sequencing of the BDR and the name change, accreditation, all that. And one of the things you pointed out was the funding formula and just trying to understand the sequencing and time impact. If we do the name change, how does that impact the funding formula by the time we get to end of session? And how are those going to be sequenced? If you could just address that in December, I would appreciate it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any other questions or comments for the Chancellor? Seeing none, I'm going to quickly move back to my chair's report. I meant to mention that Acting Chancellor Urquiaga, Vice Chair Carvalho, and myself participated in the College of Southern Nevada's evaluation with the NWSCCU. And then the very next week, the Chancellor and Vice Chair were not able to participate, but I participated in the NWSCCU evaluation of Truckee Meadows Community College. So I would want you all on the board to know that that happened and we participated in that. And now I will move to agenda item number 5. President Dalpe, are you with us in Reno?
I am, Madam Chair.
Okay. I know that you were having power outages in Carson City, so I wasn't sure if you needed to go back to the campus or not. So I will turn over agenda item 5.
Madam Chair, I just need to make a disclosure.
Oh, I'm sorry. First of all, Regent Carter has a disclosure to read. Thank you, Regent Carter.
Pursuant to NRS 281A, I hereby disclose that I'm currently employed by Matter Academy East, a K-12 charter school in Las Vegas. As part of this employment, I have been assigned to teach a dual-credit class on Matter's campus with WNC. I don't benefit pecuniary or have no interest in getting a benefit for a raise or anything from this item, but even though that, the independence of judgment of a reasonable person or entity would probably not be materially affected by the situation, I will abstain on this matter. Just to avoid any appearance of conflict.
Thank you very much for that. Now, President Dalpe, please go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning. Kyle Dalpe, Interim President, Western Nevada College, Chair McAdoo, Vice Chair Carvalho, members of the board. Thank you for hearing this item at a special meeting. I do have a couple opening comments, and then I can answer questions. Western Nevada College is currently serving more and more students again this semester as we are up in headcount and FTE. We continue to grow and be more and more stable today, more than ever. All of this is possible because of all of the employees at Western Nevada College, in particular in the classroom with our faculty members. So in front of you today is an extension to the Western Nevada College Nevada Faculty Alliance contract, which covers full-time faculty members. The WNC contract negotiations began later than expected last year due to a presidential leadership change mid-academic year, as well as all of the COVID operational considerations that occurred in the fall of 21 semester. In spring of 22, I put together a team to work with the WNC NFA to either update the three-year collective bargaining agreement or to develop an extension. Due to the complexity of items being negotiated, coupled with the uncertainty of state budgets going into the upcoming session, as well as the shortened timeline, an extension was completed to assist with workload issues this current academic year. This extension is in front of you today for consideration. We hope to come back with an ongoing three-year contract at the June, possibly at the June meeting in early next year to kick off the FY24 year with a three-year contract. So under this contract, the entire current NFA contract that we currently have is extended through June of 2023 with 4 adjustments, and they're in the briefing packet. I'll run through them real quick. There's a nursing workload adjustment that was a required exploratory item from the previous contract that we have adjusted the workload for our nursing faculty in terms of equity. A class cap consideration that is basically an item that we are codifying how we have done the class caps, which is the number of students in classes. We're putting in writing our current practice. A science lab workload adjustment and a retention amount for faculty members similar to what is being done at other colleges, but is temporary in nature and will be revisited going forward as the permanent contract is negotiated. As for funding, We consider this an investment in our faculty going forward. We heard the acting chancellor speak about staffing, and we have had a number of failed searches. We have had faculty depart, and we're trying to continue to invest in our faculty ranks. I am joined in Reno with the Nevada Faculty Alliance President Jeff Downs, and here I can answer any questions on this item. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, President Dalpy. Do we have any questions or comments from the regents?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Regent Geddes.
I have one. As I just noticed in the staff report, that there is no recommendation from the chancellor's office. I just wanted to make sure that they were recommending approval of this.
Thank you for the question. I will turn that to Acting Chancellor Urquiaga.
For the record, Dale Urquiaga, Acting Chancellor, and I apologize for not checking that box. Yes, the chancellor's office was consulted. President Dalpy kept me informed, discussed it with council, and we fully support and commend this effort.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you for the question. Regent Boylan is next, and Regent McMichael, I have you in the queue. Please go ahead, Regent Boylan.
Thank you, ma'am. Question for President Dalpy. The staffing shortage, how much is that because of the COVID stuff that we went through and got rid of people who wouldn't take the shots? Just curious, what's the, you know, do you have any figures for that, or can you get back to me or all of us? How did that affect the shortage?
So this is Kyle Dalpy, Western Nevada College. I can address that because we did pull those numbers for the December board meeting. We had three employees total, one faculty, one admin, and one classified who departed because of the COVID vaccine requirement at the end of 2021. We do have maybe one or two searches. I have to get more numbers that failed while that was in place. Because the candidates knew that they were coming into an environment, and when they heard that information, withdrew. However, the staffing shortage over the course of 2022, after that policy, as we went through this past summer and started rehiring, is more due to number of candidates in the pools, which is very slim. And we tend to, we're finding ourselves at number one, number two, and then a distant three, four. And by the time you get to actually interviewing, we lose the number one, number two candidates. We've had that on all fronts, including admin and faculty members coming into the fall semester. So the departures are people transitioning to new jobs, being able to negotiate new contracts with a new employer, I think, is the benefit, plus retirees leaving vacancies that we try to fill. I could get you some numbers. We currently have, I believe it's between 20 and 25 active searches going on right now.
Madam Chair, one more question.
Yes, sir. Please.
Thank you, ma'am. To President Dalpy there, have we made any offers to people who were forced out because of that policy to come back, and maybe do they want to come back? Or those people are persona non grata and no more? Have we tried to get them back?
So, Kyle Dalpy, Western Nevada College. I'm not sure if the question is it if we've brought back employees who departed because of that policy, and I'm not sure if I'm able to answer that due to the nature of the departure and names related to leaving because of a health issue?
That
or is
was
it just in
question.
General people coming? Okay.
Sorry, yeah, that was the question. Thank you.
So I would, if I could I get an advisory from legal counsel on whether we can talk about specific cases in relation to the COVID vaccine?
Oh, no, I'm not asking about specific cases. I'm asking about all of them in general that were, you know, sent away or left. I'm not asking about anybody in particular, just in general.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, so thank you, Regent Boylan. So Kyle Dalpy, Western Nevada College. We have had, and I'll use the adjunct ranks a little bit differently because it's a larger pool. We had three full-time that I mentioned But we also had a number of adjuncts who decided not to teach for one reason or another in spring of 22, and we can gather that that might be because of the vaccine requirement. But some of those are teaching with us now in the fall. But if it's online, it wouldn't have mattered anyway. So it depends on what they're actually teaching.
Thank you, sir.
Yep.
Let's see. Regent McMichael.
Yes, Madam Chair, motion to approve.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second by Regent Brooks. Is there any further discussion or questions or comments? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? I vote aye as well. The motion passes. We will move to agenda item number 6 for the Reno City Center lease agreement. President Sandoval, I believe you will be presenting that or calling on someone from your institution, please. Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Madam Vice Chair, Board of Regents, Chancellor, and colleagues, for the record, Brian Sandoval, President of the University of Nevada, Reno, and I truly am excited to bring this agenda item today. You may recall at the September Business, Finance, and Facilities Committee meeting that we brought forth an item requesting your feedback and direction on a potential master lease of 85 studio apartments at the Reno City Center development at 175 East 2nd Street in Reno, which, as you recall, is less than a mile from campus, the old Harris Building, for the old Renoites to give a place for it. But in any event, at that meeting, I indicated that we would bring the final agreement to you for your review and approval at a meeting in the near future. And I'm very pleased and excited to report that we have completed the negotiations and agreement with no material changes from the preliminary terms and conditions that we discussed last month. And as a summary for the record, the university heard the call, frankly, from our graduate students to do our best to find creative solutions to help to overcome one of the most significant hurdles for them for which they face today, and that is housing costs. The master lease of 85 studio apartments will allow the university to be the lessee and through our real estate office sublet the apartments to our graduate students at a volume discounted rate of $995 per month. And this is about one third, which is very significant less than the market rate for a comparable rental in the region. In turn, this will help with our recruiting and retaining our very important graduate students with a high quality housing alternative, and the materials were in your binder last month. This truly is one of the best projects going on in Reno as we speak. So as I mentioned earlier, the university and the landlord have come to final agreement on the terms. I'm very grateful to Chris Bavor, who's the main developer on the project, the equity partners, and everyone else involved for making this a reality. The major points are outlined in the briefing paper, and I know that that lease agreement is extensive. It's over 80 pages long, but there are a lot of good things in there. So for the record, and to remain consistent with your, and all those are consistent with what we represented last month to you all. So again, many thanks to many individuals, and would also to like to call out on the record Mike Wixom from the NC General Counsel's office. He really put a lot of time and effort to get this to where it is today. So with that, Madam Chair, I'm ready and excited and happy to answer any questions that you or the board members may have. Thank you very much.
Thank you, President Sandoval. Do I have any questions or comments in Reno?
I would move approval.
Okay, do I have a second? Regent Del Carlo has seconded the motion. Now, do I have any questions or comments in any of our locations? Regent Del Carlo, please.
Yes, please.
Thank you, Chair. Chair McAdoo. I just want to go on the record again and thank the owner that you negotiated this contract with, President Sandoval. I think what he's done to help our students goes above and beyond. I mean, one third less rent when the rents in Reno are continually rising. We have an acute housing shortage in the Reno-Tahoe area as companies continue to move in
for him to do this and take a personal sacrifice financially, I just think it just speaks so much of his character, and I just want to publicly thank him so much. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Del Carlo. I believe I heard, Regent McMichael, was that you that I heard wanting
yes.
to speak? Please go ahead.
Yes, I too want to commend President Sandoval and coming up with this most appreciated way of accessing the graduate students and finding affordable housing for them. This is one of the things that we try to do for our students. And this shows that you have the know-how and the will to accomplish this in the community. I want to thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments.
Thank you,
Regent Geddes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm not sure it's necessary, but based on all the demand we've been hearing, it seems like we'll be able to fill these up completely with graduate students. But if we don't, are there opportunities for junior faculty to fill up the vacancies if we don't get all 91 units full?
Madam Chair, for the record, Brian Sandoval, to you and through you to Regent Geddes, we are very confident that there'll be sufficient demand to fill all of those units. But in the remote chance that that didn't happen, absolutely we would make them available to faculty and staff.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Oh, Regent Arascada.
Thank you, Madam Chair. President Sandoval, on the bottom of page 10, Article 4, the lease term, and I say this with great compliments, three separate one-year leases provide the tenant, which are the graduate students, the confidence their housing will not be an issue throughout their time at the university. One of the main problems that I've heard from some grad students are the struggle with finding affordable housing near campus, but especially some of the international students. Have you or your staff heard from any of the international students in regards to the high demand that this and the positivity that this will also bring?
Madam Chair, to you and through you to Regent Arascada, we've heard from several graduate students, and including our international graduate students. And again, this will provide a very unique opportunity. And Madam Chair, I didn't go into detail I didn't want to be redundant from last month, but it is on the bus line, the express bus line that comes to campus. It is within, easily within walking distance of campus. So we are hopeful, and, you know, I want to be very careful, but we're already in preliminary discussions to see if we can expand this opportunity for a future agenda. But for now, we're focused on these 85 units, and we want to serve everyone because we know our international students are particularly challenged.
One more question, Madam Chair.
Please go ahead.
When is the application process going to be opening up for the grad students to have the opportunity to favorably or hopefully be selected as an occupant of this building?
Yeah, and I may have to phone a friend here, Madam Chair, with your permission, but they will be available for the fall of 23. But in terms of the application process, I'll turn it over to our Vice President of Finance, Vic Redding.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Redding.
Thank you, and good morning. For the record, Vic Redding, Vice President, Administration and Finance. Provost Jeff Thompson and myself are co-leading this implementation through the university's real estate office. So if the board approves this morning, the next step will be meeting with the dean of the graduate school as well as the deans who have graduate assistants in their programs. To determine the best and fairest and most strategic way to allocate these 85 slots. As President Sandoval mentioned, we think our issue with this is going to be not enough spaces, not having an issue with too many of them. So we want to make sure that we're being as equitable as possible as we allocate these slots, focusing on recruiting as well as retaining students. So again, if the board approves those today, those discussions will start immediately so that we can incorporate them into graduate student recruitment packages for this fall, so that they will be available. There's a lot of different ways to allocate this scarce resource, and I don't think it's going to be a one-size-fits-all. Certainly students with some level of financial need will be prioritized, as well as students that are in targeted programs that the university needs to bolster its R1 standing. So I'm sorry I can't give you a specific answer on how that allocation will occur, but I'd be happy to report back as we do develop those specifics.
Thank you much, both.
Thank you, Mr. Redding. Do I have any other questions or comments in any of our locations? I do not, so I would like to have a roll call vote on this item. Mr. Kilroy, if you will call for the roll call. Thank you.
Regent Perkins.
Aye.
Regent Tarkanian. Regent Tarkanian. Regent Arascata.
Yes.
Regent Boylan.
Aye.
Regent Brooks.
Yes.
Regent Carter.
Yes.
Regent Carvalho.
Aye.
Vice Chair, I stand corrected. Regent DiCarlo.
Aye.
Regent DiBravo. Chair McAdoo.
Yes.
Regent Geddes.
Aye.
Regent McMichael.
Yes.
Regent Boylan. Sorry, Regent Moran, strike that.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, sir. The motion passes. Sorry.
Will you please give the report on the vote?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Regent Tarkanian.
I don't think you were able to hear my aye. I just want to say I have an aye. Yeah.
Thank you so much. We couldn't hear you. I appreciate you coming back on.
I know. I had a little difficulty here.
Yeah. We're good. We can see and hear you now.
There are 12 votes affirmative and one absent. The motion passes.
Thank you so much. I honestly wanted the roll call vote so that our graduate students would know that we've heard your voice, we've taken action. UNR has certainly assisted with that. So I applaud every single person in this decision, and I most especially thank the graduate students for their participation. Really appreciate it. So I will now move to agenda item number 7. And I have a disclosure statement myself to read prior to calling Mrs. Margot Teague to the microphone. Pursuant to NRS Chapter 281A, I hereby disclose that previously Margot Teague of Impact, of Impact Evaluation and Assessment Services worked from 2004 to 2006 with the nonprofit organization, PACE Coalition Organization, based in Elko, Nevada. Subsequently, she began to work as an independent contractor for PACE from 2006 through 2016. I was the executive director of this nonprofit from 2002 through 2016. For this self-evaluation, I was not involved in the selection of impact evaluation and assessment services to perform the board self-evaluation. Only recently did I interact with Mrs. Teague when she interviewed me. Because the independence of judgment of a reasonable person would not be materially affected by my situation,
I do plan to participate in the discussion of this agenda information only item today. Thank you. All right, Mrs. Teague, if you will please come to the platform there. And thank you for joining us in person today.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, Margo Teague for the record, T-E-A-G-U-E. I am the owner of Impact Evaluation and Assessment Services. I'm based in Reno. And I am so thankful to be here with you, Chair McAdoo, Vice Chair Carvalho, Regents, and Chief Staff Presidents. You all gave me so much of your time. I'm going to click through a few slides, and then we have an opportunity to talk about the findings of your self-evaluation. I do have a couple of disclosures myself to make. First, I didn't tell anybody, I didn't think about it, but I was a recipient of your Regent Scholar Award when I was a student at Great Basin College in 2004, so it's sort of a funny full circle situation here. So I did want to let you know that. And also, I was thinking a lot about why I was so cared so much about this program and or this project. And it dawned on me, in my immediate family, I have 6 adults, and among us, we have 7 degrees from your institutions. 2 additional ones are in progress. And it also dawned on me that the institutions that you serve teach my grandchildren. You have educated my doctors, my lawyer, my accountant. So what you do matters to me, and I very much applaud what you do, but your success is my success. So I did kind of hold you to the fire here on your requirements. So, okay, with that, let's get going. I don't know what I'm doing here. Okay, so a little bit about the background process. This is a self-evaluation that is part of your bylaws. Let's see, it is Title I, Article 5, Section 25. There were 16 topics. I loosely grouped them into 4 sort of structural board topics and then 12 effectiveness topics. I created a matrix based on those. I asked each of you, 11 regents, 5 people from the NGE staff, and all of the institution presidents, the same set of questions. I did ask you all to rank both the performance and the policies on a scale of 1 to 5. A lot of you didn't love doing that. I did have to talk a lot of you out of 3s, but it went well. I don't want to pretend like this is a valid and reliable quantitative data point. This was just simply something for us to guide our conversations and to give us something to go with. Each of the interviews took place through video conferencing. They were done between July and August of this year. And I did promise everybody confidentiality so that they would be honest with me and open. And then I performed basic qualitative data analysis, came up with some indicators and coding, and put all of the results into a second level and a report that I think you've all been given. And we'll have time to go through that. I did want to take a minute to talk about the context. I was really impressed with how supportive you all were of one another's work. Very passionate group. I was impressed with how many outside entities you all are involved in, and I think you bring a great wide range of experience and background to this board. Everybody seems really motivated to get NGE to the best place possible for the incoming regents and also for the next chancellor. I also wanted to I really noticed how student-centered. A lot of times in policy work, I would have a finding, and then somebody would say, "So you say what? So what? Now what?" Right? And so you guys obviously came instantly down to how each of the decisions that you're making impact your students, and I really applaud that. And then I also was thinking it was interesting timing. After I did the analysis of the interviews, I spent hours listening to your past meetings. I listened to you while I was cooking dinner and washing dishes and driving in my car. I've heard so much just trying to keep myself, to help myself understand the culture of your work. And I've just been shocked with the breadth of what you do and the depth of what you do, from mental health to housing and all of the different things you work on. But one of the things I listened to was so striking to me. There was a big conversation about metamorphosis and butterflies. And I'm really hoping that this self-evaluation will be a way to help you come out of this a little healthier. Okay. Okay. And then also, I think it's important with the thinking about, again, the depth and breadth of what you do. I loved that at least three of you gave me really great quotes about what it is you do. So when you're talking about this wide range of activities with students and all of the, you talk about research, you talk about all of these things, I think it's important to remember what people think you should do is set policy and then oversee the implementation of policy. So it feels like it's an oversimplification, but again, I think it's important to kind of hone in on that as your focus. And now I want to talk a little bit about the difference between your strategic planning that you already have in process, and we heard a little bit about that from your chancellor today, and what I'm talking about. So on the left of this slide are the board performance and effectiveness goals that are, or topics that are outlined in your bylaws. These are the things that I asked you all about. On the right are your strategic goals that are student-centered. That's what you guys are working on now and reviewing, and these ones are fantastic. But they're two separate things, and I wanted to make sure we understood that. So one of my favorite quotes in the world, I'm an anthropologist, so I love culture. That's what I do. And I love this quote by Peter Drucker, "Culture eats strategy for breakfast." So you can have the best strategy in the world, but if we don't have effective practices on this board, it doesn't matter. So that's really what I'm hoping to do, and this is all improvement. I'm not by any stretch saying that you're beyond help or anything like that. This is like going from here to here, not from here to here. I guess that's going to be hard to catch on the record, but y'all know what I'm saying. Okay. So I just want you to keep that in mind as we go through. I'm going to just kind of click through the findings really quickly, and then we're going to have a little bit more of an interactive time where you can talk about them. This is the first one. This is one of those four performance sort of topics. I'm sorry, this is one of those structural kind of topics. So I would ask the question for those of you who took part in the interviews, where do you rank board organization? And then those the information that is in the gold boxes are the indicators that I pulled out of your qualitative data. These are the things, these are the themes that people would talk about when I asked about board organization. The pluses, minuses, and equal signs are my analysis of whether that's going well, sort of neutral, or not so well. So again, we'll talk about these in greater detail if you'd like in a minute. There were a couple of times, and this was one of them, with board leadership. A few people mentioned transparency. Not everybody did. So I didn't feel like it was something I could overlook 100%. I feel like it's something we should probably look at. But it wasn't strong enough to have a minus sign. So that's how qualitative data works. So this is where we have the most minus signs, is in the relationships, which I don't think is a surprise for anybody. And I think Chancellor Arriagua... Oh, I say it so perfectly every other time. Arriagua, I'm so sorry. He just talked about this. This is part of what he's been working on, is trying to improve these relationships. And they're all very interconnected. As we go along, I think you'll see that. And then the quality of board meetings. Okay, so I think we'll talk about this again. Okay, now we're moving into those effectiveness rankings. And I did use those numbers that you guys gave me to build this table. The first four on the left, you can see, are doing splendidly. And there's more detail, including the numerical scores, about this in the second level analysis that I gave you. But the smaller the box, the worse things are going. So we do have a few things there to work on. And again, we have time to talk about this. And remember, those numerical scores are just offered as guidance. I'm not pretending like they're quantitative data. Okay, so
Regent Moran, did I recognize the voice correctly? Or
I'm so sorry to interrupt, Madam Chair. That was an electronic glitch on my end.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm just testing my hearing, so thank you.
Okay, so what I would like to do today is to identify your priority areas for improvement, to build just a little bit of a plan, a preliminary plan for each of the topics that you choose to focus on. And then I just want to make sure that we understand we're not resolving any of this today. I don't expect we'll have any big answers. We're just kind of looking at a basic plan to address some of these things. Madam Chair, if you'll allow me to move forward with the prioritization.
Yes, please. You have the floor to.
Okay. And y'all are on. Okay. I put your IT people through their paces today, so I appreciate them very much. Oops. And my eyes don't work like they used to, so I have to do things here. Okay, good. Okay, so this is just, it's a, press 5 to, should I push 5? Okay. I don't know what's happening. Okay, so we're good. So this is just an interactive program that will allow us to set some priorities. So I understand we're in a little bit more formal setting. You'll see across the x-axis is feasibility. So do we have the ability to impact this? And then on the y-axis is importance. How important is this to us? So I've put these in here in the same order that they appear from worst to best. So the ones on the bottom, I think we don't need to worry about. The ones on the top are the more important. And I will tell you that several of these showed up in your 2017 evaluation.
Excuse me, are these in our board pack or are these just on the screen?
This is not in your board pack. This is just on the screen. The report, level 2 report, doesn't have this graphic in it, but it outlines all of these. So, okay. So I do have a... So as I mentioned, the 2017 evaluation found a lot of the same problems and the same ones that I'm highlighting today. And I would also mention that what I'm seeing is that there are a few keystone issues that are impacting the other topics. So I do have, if you'll allow it, a bit of an idea on how to start. If I were the boss... Here's what I would do. I would work on board organization, clearly important and clearly already something that your chancellor's working on and something that you can do. So this is things like making sure that we have a clear mission for your board, that we all know, for example, which task forces or committees exist. From an outsider's perspective, I can tell you that was really challenging for me to understand which committees there were. It's really difficult also just to understand the basic organizational structure between who reports to who and how that is all working. The next thing I would work on is relationships between here. And a lot of this, I think, comes down to roles and reach. So if I were an incoming regent coming into this newly elected in November, and let's say I live in Carson City, I don't mean to pick on anybody, and I see something wrong at Western Nevada's parking lot, for example, who do I, or a constituent comes to me and tells me about something wrong, Who do I go to? What are my action steps? I think you all know what you're supposed to do and what your steps are, but I don't know that it's that easily understood from your handbook because I read your handbook. Okay. And it's unwieldy. And in a quick moment, I think it's really difficult to make a decision with any degree of confidence. And the third thing I would work on is training. This came up over and over. I compressed in your bylaws, this is two topics. It's orientation and ongoing. And I just compressed it into one because I heard the same things about it. It's a fire hose. It's too hard. So I would take those two first things, make sure your training, orientation and ongoing training is very robust. Everybody's getting the same message. And then finally, I would take all of that into your exterior relationships with business community and stakeholders. I promised myself I wasn't going to use that word, and I just did it. Anyway, so this is what I would do. I think these are your keystone problems in terms of board effectiveness. This is the way I would go. And if you would work with me on this, I would like to build out a little basic baby implementation plan with you. Chair McAdoo, do you want to work with these, or is there another topic that you think we should choose first?
And are you asking about doing that today, or are you asking about that in the future?
Well, baby high level today.
Okay.
And I don't know how exactly to do that in this formal forum. So to you, I would love to entertain questions from anybody to facilitate an open conversation.
Okay. You know what? I mean, we hired you to do the job, so I want you to do the job how you would do it.
Okay.
And we're going to participate because we care about this.
Okay.
We're not going to.
Well, Patrick. Oh. Chair, then I'd have a comment.
Okay. Regent Carter has something.
A couple little things here. So I guess the first thing is we wouldn't want to say problems. We'd want to say growth opportunities or something a little
yes.
more positive.
Yes, absolutely. I'm sorry I said problems, right?
The second thing is if you do a root cause analysis of the four things that you have up there, it's really rooted in policy. So those are kind of superficial to actually doing something, like actually clarifying what the policy says so that you can know what you're supposed to do or what you're supposed to communicate. So I would completely disagree with those four things up there because I don't see them as they're not the root cause. They're the superficial thing that's hiding the root cause of all those problems.
Interesting. So. Okay. Let me think this through, please, Regent Carter. So I feel like the policy is going to be at the other end of that, but I'm interested to hear more. Yeah.
Regent Brooks has a question as well, and maybe they're going to help with the linkage there.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair McAdoo. Regent Brooks, for the record, I wanted to say that I certainly appreciate the amount of work and time that you've spent in to putting an analysis together for us. And I can only imagine the amount of data that was aggregated to do this. It's very clear that there are data schemes and metrics that you use to come up with what you feel might be the best assessment of where the board sits and where the board can go. What I would offer is that this is a perfect example of why the board has to reevaluate its handbook and why processes have to be updated and why we have to move away from what I would consider an outdated or archaic way of getting things done. And I think it's fantastic that you mention things like mission, task force, and the quality of them, organizational structure, and relationships. Because those are conversations that we've been having. And what I would offer is the reason that I'm saying this is an example of why we have to reevaluate our handbook and processes is because in the handbook, there is this It is written that an evaluation will take place essentially within or every 5 years. And the evaluation needed to take place at this particular time because of what's written in the handbook. What I would offer is it was the worst time for an evaluation to take place. And the reason that it was the worst time for an evaluation to take place is because the board is currently evaluating the handbook. The board is currently, as it is one of our agenda items today, to reevaluate the tasks, roles, responsibilities of the chancellor. Okay. In other words, the process of assessing and reassessing and redeveloping processes for the board are currently going on. And so what I'd like to offer is, it's almost as though this process took place, if we were talking about the construction of the board or a building, this process took place while we broke ground. And we have not yet laid the foundation of what we're doing. And we had somebody from the city or the county come in and say, we want to inspect your electrical wiring. And we say, that's great that you're coming in to inspect, but frankly, we haven't laid out where we're going to put our electrical wiring yet. And so therefore, your assessment or inspection of what we have going on may not be as favorable as it could be had an assessment or an inspection occurred after we started building things up.
Mm-hmm.
And so as much as I absolutely 100% appreciate the amount of work that goes into this, particularly from the data aggregation standpoint, right? And then the strategies that have to be built out in terms of the matrix and best procedures that could be going forward. I think to offer the board to go over this right at this moment in an open discussion might not be the best time to do it, even if it's what you would consider to be baby steps, because these conversations are going to be lengthy because we're going to be changing potentially how things work from top to bottom anyhow, which is what we've been going over for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just wanted to be able to offer that, you know, both to the board and to you with our respect in terms of recognizing, the board recognizes where we are. What we're looking at is where we can get to, right? So we want to feed our faith in the excitement of possibilities that we are going to be able to achieve rather than worry about some of the things that have happened in the past and what could have led, although we have to examine it, what could have led to some of this confusion to begin with.
Mm-hmm. No, I appreciate that. And I agree with you. It did feel a little bit, the timing was off. The timing was weird. But I would offer that if you, as you're doing the work in committees, you will have the findings that are in the Tier 2 report to possibly help guide you in the right direction. And you are maybe not in the right direction. I shouldn't over give it too much power, but would help offer you something other to think about. The other side of this is that you had a self-evaluation in 2017, and as I mentioned, a lot of the same issues were raised in 2017. So I would very much like to leave you with, I understand you're already working on these things, but with a bit of a plan so that they don't fall off. And I don't know what that looks like best for you. That's why I'm trying to facilitate this as an interactive.
And in all fairness, I genuinely appreciate where your sentiment is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of this might be exactly what Regent Carter had demonstrated and mentioned, mm-hmm. is that there is the possibility of some things that might be looked at from your standpoint of data may not fit completely in that box of how we have to develop this, what these conversations actually look like, and how much of those conversations could be had in this forum at this very moment today,
mm-hmm.
right? While
mm-hmm.
we are still having conversation about what it is and still looking at potential agenda items to rediscover, reevaluate, mm-hmm. and place, I would say, in improvement processes to support the betterment of the board as we move forward in conjunction with the relationships between the board, the system office with the presidents,
yes,
and the board with the presidents. And so we have this web of parts that we are strategically working on with, I would say, some pretty significant due diligence.
Yes.
To make sure that we are going to be doing things much differently in the future. And as much as I would love to have conversations about student experience, mental health, a campus growth, graduation rates, and really do the things that I think the board is set up to do, we have to take a look at our handbook. We have to readjust and redevelop what the roles are of the chancellor. And so all of these things are happening as we speak.
Right. And I think another example of that, a perfect example of that, is my number one recommendation was going to be the board's commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion, because it kept coming up. And then as I listened to your meetings, it kept coming up, student comments, people's comments. But then most recently, they just passed the resolution. So as it's like a piece of the foundation of the metaphorical house we're talking about got put into place. So then I know now that I didn't need to, that you have the steps happening to fix that. So what would be helpful? How can I leave you in a way that would help this ongoing work? And maybe this is a question for the chancellor, perhaps, is what can I do to help you? Because by your bylaws, we're supposed to have some steps in place. And I don't know that that happened last time. And I don't, what I absolutely do not want to see is that now in another 5 years, these same things rise to the top.
So Regent Brooks, for the record, what I would offer is that another evaluation like this takes place in 2 years, not five, because we're building out the house now.
Okay.
And we have new leadership as we have an acting chancellor. Mm-hmm. And because our acting chancellor, and I would refer to him as the chancellor, is as diligent as he is in ensuring the board has processes set up prior to whatever future departure date his leaving us will occur, that we're set up for success.
Right.
And so we're building that foundation now, and we're having conversations now. And so I agree with you. Do we want to hold this for 5 years? We don't. It would be great to come back, for you to come back and assess the board in 2 years after these changes that we're working on have been made and implemented.
Okay.
And then let's see where we are. Mm-hmm. I can't speak for things that happened in 2017 because I did not have the seat in 2017.
Right.
And neither did some of the other regents who are on this board.
Right.
And so I'm not so sure that the board as an entirety, right, can bear the cross of things that may have not been done with the best foot forward at that time. But I certainly have faith and confidence that as we move forward, we will be moving with our best foot forward.
Okay.
So we could, I mean, I won't be on the board, but the board could certainly choose in 2 years to do another evaluation. The code says every 5 years. It has to be done at least every 5 years. So we are at the fifth year date right now. Regent Del Carlo had a comment, and then Regent Perkins, please.
Thank you, Chair McAdoo, and thoughtful comments from my colleagues here. And I have to say, I don't know if you can address best practices. I was on the phone yesterday with the CEO of the Association of Community Colleges Trustees, because I sit on that board, and I mentioned to him that we had just done a self-evaluation. We hadn't done one since 2017, and I have to say, to your point, there was only two people that are on the board that were even on the board in 2017.
Right.
So I went back to 2017. Yeah, I went back to, in 2017, there was some of us were, or four of us were brand new when we did that evaluation. Mm-hmm. And there's only two that are getting off the board, say, this year that were there. So I went back and looked at the 2017 material. I thought I read in there, because it's been a couple days, that I don't know where you are for best practices, but I think doing an evaluation every 5 years is absolutely insane. You should do an evaluation yearly. Sorry, it should be yearly, and at the worst, it should be every 2 years. How are you ever going to have continuous improvements, the proper metrics, on and on and on? So this, because you said with the things you read through, because I was reading through the old one, I mean, not a whole lot has changed. And I agree with Regent Brooks. Our processes and our handbooks and our code all need to be revised. I had said to both our acting chancellor, Ariaqua, and to our new general counsel, Kilroy, that at the point that we do hire a new chancellor, and I don't know when that is, his contract goes to the end of next year, but I don't want to see him leave because we'll pay him anyway, whether he stays or doesn't stay. And I'm a fiscal conservative. I want to get my money's worth. But and then one of the things I like so much about our general counsel, Kilroy, was that he had gone through the medical board's procedures and whatever stat he had, I don't remember it, but all these complaints went down to nothing because you get your structure into place. And to Regent Brooks, I think the structure, it's been the structure that's been hard to work around. So my thing would be at some point when we have a new chancellor come on board that our acting chancellor and our chief legal counsel here completely go through the handbook. I mean, we're going through it in bits and pieces, but it's really unwieldy, unmanageable, I think, mm-hmm. and it contradicts itself. But to my point also, I appreciate the work you've done too, and it seems a little bit disjointed, but it's because of our code. Back to his point, it's back to our code. I mean, we should be doing this every year, and I'd like your opinion on what you think. Because how can we, I mean, people change every 2 years. We next going into next year after November 8th, we are going to have for sure 4 new regents. We could possibly have a 5th new regent.
Right.
So it's nothing but turmoil. And I did a little bit of math while I was sitting here. And since I've been on the board, I'm in my 6th year. We've had that 72 months worth. So we had a chancellor for 36 months permanent. We had one for 19 months that was permanent, but then we've had 17 months of acting four different people. So I've worked with 6 different people in 6 years.
Right.
And that's part of our problem, too. We don't have stability, and we don't have follow-through. You go back to the report, where have we been for the last 5 years?
So to your point of best practices, Regent Del Carlo. I think that there's no hard and fast best practices rule as far as it's very organization dependent. So some different types of organizations could probably have a self-evaluation every 5 years. But I do agree with the instability that you all have been experiencing. And to also add in the context of some of the things that you've had to make decisions about and during COVID and budget reductions and all of that, adding that into the context, I absolutely think a more frequent evaluation is good. Annually, maybe for a while, I feel like I'm shooting myself in the foot a little bit, but I do think annually would be too much. After you're stabilized. So during a stabilization period, yes, annually, and then you could probably go every other year. And it could be timed out in terms of your, well, I guess the election cycle wouldn't work, so never mind, because you're all different, huh?
Right. Mm-hmm. Just to follow on, Chair, just so you know, I mean, every 2 years, the board composition changes
right.
due to elections.
Mm-hmm. And that also speaks to the importance of having a very consistent and rigorous training program. So if with that level of changeover, your regents need to be able to come in and hit the ground running and know exactly, I'm envisioning flow charts and this is what I need to do in this situation and something easily tabulated so that, because what I think has happened perhaps is that they get the information, and this is what I'm hearing has happened, is the information is provided at that initial orientation training, and then maybe you ask somebody a question, and then maybe they're not there anymore, so then you go ask somebody else a question, and you might be getting different answers. So that's why training is so high on my recommendations, because of that turnover. So I think Well, perhaps I'll show you.
Mrs. Teague?
Yes.
I believe Regent Perkins... Okay.
Okay.
All right.
So this is basically what I had in mind today is, and maybe it is too much, but I thought it would be good to come up with those topics that we brought forward. We can even skip the action steps if you want, but come up with a lead entity, one of you perhaps, or somebody in the chancellor's office who could say, I am responsible for making sure we're working on this topic. But perhaps you feel like with your committees and different task forces, you're adequately handling that.
Well, one thing I think that I see from the conversation from all those who have spoken is, you know, we may consider the timing incorrect. However, we've had the timing of looking at our handbook. I mean, I can say I've been trying to do that since I became chair. However, we kind of can't go backwards. We can't recreate 2 years from 5 years. So I honestly think that we have opportunity here to get some information to help us as we look at those policies that need to be changed. Even if we only walk away with 3 or 5 or how many ever, I know we all have policies in our head that we know could work more effectively, and I'm suspecting that many of them are going to fall in these categories. So I still believe that we have information to gain from your work that you did that can help us as a board as we move forward to policy and code changes. We are all aware they're needed, so I would like to request that you go ahead and take us in a direction to get us to some codes for us to specifically look at, because we're going to meet after this meeting on roles and responsibilities of the chancellor.
Right.
So even if it's a discussion that guides us into some thoughts about policy changes there. Does the board see that as workable? I know that you're capable of doing that. So,
Regent Brooks, for the record, and thank you.
I think I was in the queue next. Yes?
Yeah, Laura Perkins did have. Sorry, Regent Perkins. I apologize.
I'm sorry. I thought you wanted to finish the discussion on the question. No, please go ahead.
One. But I guess I have something to add, because it's what stood out to me is that some of the same growth opportunities that were happening 5 years ago are still happening today. That points to me. That points to two things: training and policy. I think it's spot on that if we did training every year, or every quarter on certain topics, that would increase the continuity. That, you know, like I think Regent DiCarlo mentioned that we're disjointed because new people come on, we rotate off. And that's hard to keep a consistency. But with training and perhaps some background information, like how this policy came to be, why is it still in place, what were the unintended fallouts, just think, you know, those type of growth opportunities, that would be, I think that would, it would help the consistency issue to make sure that we are being consistent and we do see the problems, not from just when we came on the board, but from, you know, things we inherited that we had no control over. And the other thing, yes, 1 year, if we're making lots of changes, I think 1 year evaluations are perfect, just because we get to evaluate what we were doing. Is it effective, or was it just, you know, we get to evaluate ourselves on the changes that we've made to see if they are effective and what needs to happen to make them effective. I think that's it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Can I make a comment really quickly? I just thought of something.
Yes.
When we're talking about policy, if you have two policies, you have the policies that you're making for your institutions to follow, and then you have those structural board policies. So perhaps, Regent Carter, that was a misunderstanding that I was having with you. I'm sorry about where policy falls on that level of importance.
Go ahead, Regent Carter.
Yeah, so if, as an outside consultant, you found those four areas, I think from my standpoint would be useful, but I'll be gone as well. If you could take those four things and then find the policies that go to them, that's the root cause of what each one of those things is. The other piece to that is the policies and procedure manual that comes out of the chancellor's office, and there's conflicts, I guess to put it kindly, between the two books sometimes too. So if you can find those things, I think that might be really useful for the board for the next step.
Thank you. I'm sorry I was on a wrong track of policy with you. That's why I said it was on the wrong side. I was thinking more of the institutional policies when you said that. So you're speaking about internal, how we do our business policies. Okay.
Regent Brooks, I think you were next.
Thank you, Chair. Regent Brooks, for the record. So what I was going to offer, and I agree with my other colleagues in terms of the comments, I think what you might find are the items that you've identified that need work, and some of it needs substantial work, especially when we're talking about revising the handbook.
Right.
I don't know that we would disagree with you. And I think we're going to find that what you have pointed out are things that we have pointed out as a board in terms of those changes being made. And I think one way to be extremely helpful was the recommendation that Regent Carter just made, where we identify where the issue is, take a look at what the policy states regarding these issues in terms of revamping that policy and reworking it or abolishing it, frankly, if it doesn't fit with what we're doing today in 2020, too, as we start to move forward with implementation of new ideas and procedures to support the entire system.
Yes, that's action step number one, absolutely, because you can't do anything that's against your policy or that you don't have a policy for already, right?
So it appears to me we're getting ready to move into a different little topic set here.
Well,
so if I'm asking that because I think a 10-minute biological break would be in order. And we will come back and meet at 10:45. And I can't see the Reno screen, so Regent Geddes, Regent Arascotta, or anybody in Elko or Reno that might have comments or questions, please text Mr. Kilroy's cell phone. I know that was sent out from board staff for us for communication purposes. So we're going to break until 10:45. Thank you. It is 10:45. We are ready to begin again. I've got this gavel. Yeah. All right. Thank you. I do want to ask before you begin if there were any comments or questions from Reno or Elko. Or those who are on virtually.
Questions?
None at this point, Madam Chair.
Okay. Seeing none, please go ahead, Mrs. Teague. Thank you.
Okay. Let me see if I can screen share again. I cannot. I don't know. Okay, so while okay. Do you want me to? Okay, so while we broke, I just filled in the left side of this with those topics that I'm recommending. And please don't judge me for any typos on there because I did it pretty quickly. And I just put number one thing is to identify what internal policies are already applicable to those topics. And I think that is a great first step. I think the most important thing for us to focus on is this lead entity and accountability section. Obviously, the Chancellor's Office is going to be taking a big role in all of these, but I would love to see one of the board members volunteer to sort of champion each of these issues just to think about timelines, because the other side of this is giving a little bit of a timeline for when we would come back. So what I would like to have is just a basic timeline for some accountability. So within 6 months, we'll have the policies identified, or within 1 year. I don't know what your timeframes would be appropriate, and we can work on that in between now and when this final report is due back to you for approval. But I would like to, is anybody, I feel like an auctioneer now, who's interested in championing the topic of board organization?
So, Margo, I think it would be helpful if we had an understanding of what you mean by championing that.
Yes.
Are you just asking us that we want to accomplish such and such in 6 months or 9 months? Or are you asking us that we're putting together a committee to take this on, because that won't work right now?
No.
But you just want information so it could be kind of popcorn style, somebody who thinks we should and could get this piece done in 6 months, just spit it out, correct?
Right. So, for example, under the board chancellor institution relationships, you already have that committee. So the obvious person to champion that would be the chair of that committee.
Yes, that would be Regent DeBrava.
Okay.
Well, we just gave you a job. Yeah, so I get that. So really, for anybody on the Regent Board, if you have an idea of when you think that we could get the board organization policy together by whatever time, or what time we need to have it done by, you just want us to tell you that time limit, right?
Yep. If you
Do I have a suggestion from any regent for that? Regent Brooks, go ahead, please.
Regent Brooks, for the record, the suggestion that I have is, much like maybe there are some conversation and discussions about various subcommittee members, that we take the list essentially of things that are being offered to look at, and rather than having regents add their name to the list right now, maybe we take the list and then information is pushed out to the regents via email, as you would communicate through chief of staff or the attorney, to see who's interested in doing that.
I would be fine with that. And then would I be able to include that in the report back to you? If I gave you just a little template to tell me who might be interested in championing that, when they might expect to have some action steps completed, if I gave you a template?
Well, I think we could, for now, let's take the time that you're asking for, because we get into some codes when we're talking about appointing subcommittees and task forces and who that falls on. And so certainly I want to hear from all the regents, like if you have a specific one that you would be interested in. But I think what's critical to know is that mostly those subcommittees and task forces are appointed by the chair of the board. I have no intention of trying to control what is going to happen after January, but I do have intention of doing my job well and effectively between now and the end of December. And if that means we have a task force that needs to be put together for your report that comes back in December, I would work on appointing that. But it's always helpful to know what each region's area of expertise and passion is for what they want to work on.
So I think that the Chancellor's Office is obviously responsible for the orientation training, the content. They're the sort of the subject matter experts in a lot of those things. No,
not for the regents.
Oh, okay. No. Okay. I thought they did
the board staff.
Oh,
does
right. Okay.
The regents, because it's like a triangle. We have institutions, all the administration, students, etc. We have the Board of Regents,
right,
and the staff, and we have the Chancellor's Office and the cabinet and the people in these buildings.
So it may not be necessary to have a subcommittee or formal structure to champion any of these. Right. It could be then your NCHI or your board staff who would be championing
yeah.
that.
Yeah. So for now, you want the time, though.
Is well, I don't need. We can work. I can send you back a timeline. I can. Okay. You can send that back to me. I just okay. really need. I would really like to identify who would be sort of the lead entity who really wants to think about this.
Mr. Kilroy would like to address this, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to bring attention to what the agenda item says. And the agenda item says, for the purpose of the discussion, will be to identify priority areas of improvement and preliminary action steps to strengthen the effectiveness of the board. I believe that a vast majority of our time should be focused on identifying the priority areas for improvement and having developed some type of a consensus or an agreement among those. And then subsequently, because there's more meetings to be had regarding this evaluation, then we could move toward more action items where we identify and assign the preliminary action steps to strengthen the effectiveness of the board. Thank you.
Okay. I perhaps got ahead of myself. I thought we agreed that these were the main topics that we want to address: board organization, board chancellor institutional relationships, training, exterior relationships, and relations with political, business, and community.
So those were the, if I remember correctly, those were the places that you had the minus marks in your first slide presentations, correct? So yeah. Do I understand correctly that
yes.
you identified those as the areas of need for improvement?
And those were the keystone areas that I think a lot of the other areas that had negative findings are sort of symptomatic of these more keystone foundational
okay.
elements.
So I feel like those have been identified by you through your interviews with the 24 people.
Yes.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right. Mm-hmm. So, Regent Carter, I think you had a comment.
So, as an information-only item, we've given you that feedback, but we haven't, voted on it, I guess.
No, right.
But keeping in line with what Mr. Kilroy said, the coming up with a priority, of what maybe to do, I think this belongs in an ad hoc committee, and that would be our priority to put that together. I don't see any other way of actually having an individual regent tackle training. And I don't know how they would, in isolation, design a training program or propose policies.
No, right. I was not suggesting that they would address it individually. I was more looking at a way to share accountability between the different entities that are involved with NCHI, the board, the chancellor, the board's staff, each of those entities to share responsibilities so that it didn't fall on any one.
Madam Chair, if I may, for the training part of it, I think IDEA Committee is going to touch on that, about the trainings that should be offered upcoming. For we were going to discuss that at some future point. So that training might come under the IDEA Committee, because we can just, throw some extra things on there. It's not really. So
well,
we're going to be
think-
discussing that.
I do think the training will be more than just diversity training.
It will be
training for regents to
yes,
understand how regents work.
Agreed. However, yeah. But we're going to be it's not much difference to put a couple extra items on, open meeting law, for instance. It's not a far stretch for us to include that in the training for all of the regents. That's
okay.
Just a thought.
Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, Chair McAdoo. Of all those items, and I'm not sure how this process is going to move forward, but we've got 2.5 months, and then, 4 or 5 people are going to leave. We're going to get 4 or 5 people more. And I really think our board needs to focus on training and what their orientation is going to be. Because, I thought that my training in 2017 was completely inadequate. I mean, I won't even talk about it. It was not good at all. But there's things that we can all identify that we may, if that's all we get out of this, maybe even today, if we get working in on how are we going to get these people up to speed quickly. I mean, if you're really diligent as someone running for office, you've done what you've done. I went back and looked at meetings too. I mean, it's all out there in the open, but how many people were going to do that? I really think we should concentrate between now and the end of the year while we have the 13 here on how that orientation is going to work, because that really sets your tone. It sets how these people feel included, how they're going to be able to contribute quickly. And there's, you know, there's three different levels of experience on this board right now. I'm thinking since I came on the board, the newest ones and what they could really offer. I think that's, we should get into, at least get into that.
And there were, if I may, there were several, there's a whole host of recommendations that you all provided to me to give you a head start in that level two analysis report. And it ranges from Robert's Rules of Orders to, it's a full gamut of reach. Reach was a big topic. So, you know, if a regent is concerned about something on a campus, do they call the president? Do they call their fellow regent? Do they call the chancellor's office? How does that, how's that supposed to work? So that's why I put it third, just because until you figure out the roles and responsibilities and some of those organizational things, it's going to be difficult to have an appropriate training, even though we know it's time critical.
Well, I would actually agree that the training is a huge piece, considering we're moving quickly to January.
Right.
And I think overall, that's the problem with the handbook, is this code is dependent on this code, which really doesn't work with this code. So I see that as challenging at best. But so just in the essence of what you've done for today, can we just go to the board chancellor relationships? And we already have that essentially in the works with Chair DeBrava and his team working on that with the chancellor. So, and really the goal, I believe, for that is to have the presentation of the code change at the December board meeting. So we have a timeline for that.
Mm-hmm.
2.5 months, whatever it is, the December 1st. But really, it will be before that because it has to be submitted to the board staff to get the agenda ready. So is that November 1st? November 1st. November 1st is the deadline. So we're talking 2 weeks, right? Yikes. Okay. So we can start with that timeline and that's there, and we've already got it all in the works.
Okay, so if you look at the in the level two report that was provided to you, mm-hmm. Let's see. Sorry, my own system is failing me. It's on page 14 of that report. There's several recommendations that came from you all that could be considered. And again, these are things like I understand that your ad hoc committee is already working on this, but this is just very simple things like identifying which committees and task forces are already existing and how to utilize those correctly. I think that would help a lot with the relationships. And I really wanted to just stress the interconnected nature of this, and I understand that it's a lot to untangle all at one time, but that's why I focused on those keystone issues that I think are causing problems elsewhere. So I think if your ad hoc committee is close to coming to a resolution for the chancellor's role, then just maybe, you know, you can read these and see if there's something else that maybe you all came up with that need to be addressed. And perhaps that would morph your committee into something else, or perhaps you'll feel like it is adequately handled, and then we can reevaluate in the future.
So for that particular thing, when this meeting ends, we're having lunch, and then we're meeting with, and most all the regents attend that. We have a committee, but we can all participate. So it's not that long to read, so I'm going to ask each of us as regents to commit to reading that page 14 ideas, and then when we meet this afternoon with Chair DeBrava's committee, if there's something on there that we think would be extremely helpful to the Chancellor's roles and responsibilities discussion today, we can address that.
Exactly.
Does that work?
Absolutely.
And then after that's done, if Chair DeBrava wants to connect with you on your piece of this for your December report and how that works, is that?
Yes, exactly.
Those are the steps, correct?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Okay. All right. That sounds good. So
so on these issues related to board organization.
Let's see here. I'm looking for the page number.
These are things, so I know that your ENSHE has a mission statement. Mm-hmm. It from 1874, I think the mission statement was from. And I think that's lovely. But I'm not sure that we understand if the board itself has a mission statement in support of ENSHE or a clear mission of how you support ENSHE. I couldn't find one. So I think that's maybe perhaps a little confusing for the public. So again, on page 18 of that report, I talk about the patterns of responses that I saw there. And it's all about things like organizational charts, roles, all the different subcategories within ENSHE. What do they do? How do they support students, ultimately support students? And what the different charges are for each of the committees. So it's almost like a little mini systems analysis of what's happening within the ENSHE system, and then making that be really transparent to the general public. So if which I know that you truly do want public input, and but it would be really difficult for me to know which one of these things to show up to. So those, it's almost like a mini systems analysis of the board or of the ENSHE system to understand everybody's roles within that. So is there an existing entity that is already addressing this? Is there already a committee or anybody who would be already looking at these bigger picture type of situations?
For the board organization.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I could answer that. Regent Carter, please.
Wouldn't most of that fall under the strategic planning committee with Regent Carvalho? At least like the mission and some of that stuff?
I think that that's fair. I think that there's a lot that cross-cuts, to use your term, with board organization versus our strategic planning, and I think that that's something that we could look at with our committee, although the committee is coming to an end. But I think for planning purposes in the future, I think something that we can take on for future work and possibly to have that discussion during our meeting next month as well.
Okay. Thank you.
So is your committee's coming to an end at the end of December. Is that correct?
Yes, that
is correct.
So
then your plan with that is to bring something back to the board in January or not?
Can I defer to the chancellor on exactly the timeline on that?
Because I think if we give her the timeline, then that helps in the development of her report and where we're headed. Thank you. Thank you, Chancellor.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Madam Vice Chair. For the record, Dale Urquiaga, Acting Chancellor. since the committee meets on the 18th, I think then, yes, we would come to the full board in its January special meeting for you to adopt sort of the framework, and we could at that time make a recommendation about continuance of a planning committee or a board organization strategy conversation. We can discuss that on the 18th and come back in, as I say, January or February at a special meeting.
Okay, great.
Does that give you what you need?
Yes, yes, I think so. I know this is difficult. I knew this would be difficult, but I'm reminded, I think it was President Sandoval a few meetings back said that improvement is a contact sport. I know this is difficult. So
we have chairs of those two committees right now. We have a timeline for those committees. The chairs of those committees and you are able to work together to develop the report that's going to come before the board
yes.
December 1st and 2nd to approve.
Yes.
And does that work for all of us? Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So we have three more of these to talk about. So training. Is there an existing committee or task force that training would perhaps fit within?
Regent Carter.
I do have another question and comment, I guess. So in our guidebook, Mr. Kilroy, does it say specifically what the training is or just that a training exists? Or do you know in our regent handbook?
I don't know the answer to that specifically. Quite frankly, anytime I need answers to the handbook, I have to look them up.
Okay.
Because I don't have the capability of memorizing 1,000 pages.
I honestly think it might be worth 5 or 10 minutes to just kind of come up with a list of what people think should be at that. And if we do want to refer it back to Perkins, I'm just offloading everything to everybody else. So if we do come up with a list, we can give it to Regent Perkins, maybe to take to her committee to at least start that process.
So on pages 4 and 5 of that second tier report that we were given, those have ideas already on there. For training. I mean, I know we can all read them. And those were suggestions from your interviews, correct?
Yes, they came from you guys.
So do you want me to read them into the record, or do you each want to read them?
I guess maybe if we can take a second and read them and see if anybody wants to add to that.
Okay.
No, Regent Carlo has something to say.
Pages 4 and 5 have to do with training, orientation, and ongoing. So, Mrs. Teague, would you like to facilitate that piece, please?
Do you want me to read those?
Yeah, read the
okay. The
responses, read what the suggestions were to be brought forth in
okay.
the training, please.
So the common patterns of responses were that orientation is a fire hose of information, that it was impossible to retain everything. Then that the ongoing training is not formalized or consistent, that the handbook is unwieldy, that system staff is available to answer individual questions, and I'd like to reiterate, everybody loves the system staff so much, and that some regions do seek out training on their own through different web-based programs or different organizations they belong to, but not everybody does. And then some of the suggestions were an annual retreat, figuring out how to do that within the open meeting laws. But it doesn't seem like that's impossible. It does seem like there are ways to do that. Creating a regent mentor program, creating a situation where a regent with more experience could mentor a younger regent just procedurally, not guiding their vote. Requiring regents to attend professional conferences. Revising the handbook with simple tabs and flowcharts for easy references, or even perhaps creating a separate training manual. And then the individual topics that were brought up were data interpretation, understanding lead indicators in the lag, so that if you're looking at data from 3 years ago and that's and making policy decisions, agenda processes, open meeting laws, Robert's rules, which I clearly need training on myself. I've completely blown them today, and I apologize. Leadership training, shared governance, diversity, equity, inclusion, roles and responsibilities, legal requirements, media, and that is like media relations, building collegial relationships, flowchart for processes to address concerns, macro versus micro level management, ethics, fiscal and budgeting. This is another one of those building the house issues. I know that a lot of people talked about the fiscal reports, and then in the meetings I listened to, I heard that you all are piloting new fiscal reporting systems in some of your committees, organizational charts, and then some training about academics in general, including what research means in the university system, how tenure, salaries, and inflation are working, and then some people provided resources of the AAC and the AGB for ongoing training. So we're asking if there's anything in addition to this that we'd like to provide to possibly the IDEA committee if they want to start taking on training.
Well, I do believe that the training component definitely will need to reside under the umbrella of the board staff.
Okay.
And certainly the regents can have input into that, and we can help develop it. But I think the board staff is going to carry the bulk of that, of getting it drafted and written up, and because they really, the majority of the board staff are the ones with the experience in that area.
Okay.
So I would suggest that they hold a very key place in the flowchart of the training component. Regent Del Carlo?
Thank you, Chair McAdoo. And traditionally, that's been under our legal counsel. And I think that's where it belongs.
Okay.
And the staff.
Mr. Kilroy, can I put your name on here?
Please do. I relish the opportunity to train the current and incoming regents. Feel free to email me any and all suggestions. And I, again, relish the opportunity to be able to improve this area greatly. I've trained aviators. I've trained medical examiners. And I look forward to doing the best job possible so we can be more efficient and effective. Thank you.
Thank you for your enthusiasm.
Right. And I'm still going to request that the board staff be a piece of that.
They're both on there.
With all due respect to Mr. Kilroy and his education and naval experience, et cetera, we have 17-year experience on boards. And I know that we're going to be making some changes, but I believe that they are also open to those. So together, we're all going to work on that. And did I see? Oh, Chancellor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Dale Arquiaga, Acting Chancellor. With respect to Regent Perkins, I appreciate you volunteering the IDEA committee, but I think we should keep that committee's role in training in the area that you're already agendized to discuss. And I say that not because of anything to do with the committee, but to do with staff. As you know, we have borrowed staff to support that committee, and we have not only robbed Peter to pay Paul, we'd like ransacked Peter in an alley and left him penniless to pay Paul. In this instance, the poor person who is serving you also has a job in the finance department. So I would just really strongly encourage you to keep that role with the board office and chief of staff. I appreciate that. And that your committee advance those areas related to diversity, just out of respect to our staff. Thank you.
Thank you. And Regent Arascada, I have you in the queue to speak, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Similar to what Regent Brooks mentioned a few minutes ago was in regards to the current handbook, 600 and some odd page handbook. When this presentation came out originally, I noticed that on page 15 of the presenter's presentation, page 15, the smallest box right there is training. And as we've been discussing for the past 15, 20 minutes about training, and you jump over to our handbook, the Title I Bylaws and Board of Regents, and you go through that entire handbook, which I did over the past couple days, there is nothing in there of training. There is nothing in there in the constitutional status of the requirements for onboarding and training of regents. So, yes, this is unquestionably necessary, and it shouldn't just be for the new regents. It should be ongoing training for all regents. Having that knowledge of on a yearly reminder of whatever the issue is going to be addressed, the proper Robert Rules of Order, etiquette, proper etiquette throughout the meetings, restoring the acclaimed decorum of the board itself, and the educational knowledge in which we can do the job in which we've been elected to do. This is not something that anybody can come in and know, regardless what business or if you think these can be hand-selected positions of the board. You need, everybody needs the training. And this needs to be a requirement for all board members. Madam Chair, thank you much.
Thank you for that. So I think we have direction in that area, correct?
Yes.
You have what you need from us, all right?
I do.
Perfect.
Okay, I'll direct you to page 6 of the Tier 2 report, Relations with Business Community and Political Leaders. This was one of the topics that we had a lot to say about, but we didn't have a lot of solutions to offer. Would you like me to read them? Okay. Some regents come with existing relationships in these spheres. So we're, again, talking about business, political, and community leaders. Or they already know how to form those relationships. Others don't. And there's little guidance about how to do this appropriately. The lack of formal training or guidance and differing levels of region experience in the realm contribute to a disjointed, chaotic approach to building relationships. One result is that the only press the regents get is bad press. Mm-hmm. Presidents and system staff wonder if or how they should try to fill this void. This hurts ENSHI, especially during our legislative session. And I liked this, that the good relationships help build relevant policies that help the entire state. Otherwise, we're stabbing in the dark. The suggestions for fixing this, there's only two. The first is that the system may facilitate conversations by providing specific talking points for regents to address. And the second suggestion is that the system may also match key figures with board members and facilitate meetings between them.
So when I think of the relationships between the business community outside of ENSHI itself, I can't help but think when we get these other three pieces that we've just spoken about functional to some high degree, it's going to have some automatic impact on our relationships with those outside of ENSHI. It has to, because we're going to be on the same page. We're going to have helped develop changes in our codes, and we're going to know those because we're going to be doing that in some kind of group meetings, and then we're going to be operating under the same message to those that we are trying to build relationships with outside of our circle here, so in our outer circle of influence. So I would say, as important as I believe that is, I think that those first three items that we talked about are going to be the critical foundation pieces for us to have in place before we actually take on that. But I think those things are going to help us be able to take on those outside relationships, because those are also going to be part of the training.
Right.
You know, what's appropriate for us representing regents. Regent Carter, then Regent Perkins, and did I see? No. Okay, thank you.
So I guess I would do this one and then not do the next one, but the external relationships as far as workforce, I really think that belongs or could start over in the workforce committee with Del Carlo, and they could at least start having a conversation on how ENSHI reaches out and communicates to businesses and the business community and companies or whatever in that committee. If Regent Del Carlo, chair of the Workforce Development Committee, would be interested in that.
Please, go ahead.
Just don't forget, we changed the board changed it. We only meet twice a year for an hour. So just keep that in mind.
Well, and if I can throw this in, it worked out extremely well this year. That may not be the case for next year because we didn't have all these changes that we're getting ready to try to implement for this coming year. The beauty of the way those committee meetings have been set up is it has allowed every regent to be available wherever they are to hear all those committee meetings the way that was calendared. So I'll just throw that in. But it does not have to stay the way that it was. Idea Committee had that as well, and they've had a couple of special meetings this year because you needed them. So we can always be fluid with the things that we need to have happen. That's pretty critical to what we do. Regent DeBrava, did you have, no. Regent Perkins, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was thinking about specifically the media aspect. It's like when we do good things, we don't trumpet ourselves. And it has to be intentional. It has to be intentional. It can't just be a few regions doing this here and there. We, like you said, we have to have a united message. If we're going to have $1.99 sales on water, then we need to tell everybody to push that out on their social media. We're going to do this, and so everybody knows. I think that would go a long way to improving our relationships with figures that are not in our board meetings and don't see us working behind the scenes at what we do. It just has to be intentional. And yeah, that's just intentional.
So I would say that we are aware that the Chancellor's office is coordinating efforts to hire a public information officer for us. That's going to help. But on the other side of that coin, in the codes that the board determines, in even our roles as regents, I'm pretty certain that some of the stuff that we would choose to put out as regents would need to come through the PIO and certainly our own council. Because it's not going to work if, as regents, we just decide we want to send something out on social media about the regents. I don't think that'll work anyway. Is that correct, Mr. Kilroy? Okay. Anyway, I think that's good. Do you have something to say, Chancellor? Please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Dale Urquiaga, Acting Chancellor. I have managed to avoid taking any responsibility so far in this meeting. You'll notice that. So I'm happy to take this one as the lead. We are trying to figure out the communications function here. And as I said, we are having some staffing challenges in the PIO, but this one is one we owe you. So I don't know what a plan looks like, if it's a person or an agency or a plan, but I'll take this one if the
Perfect.
Board is acceptable with that.
Thank you. And I think that's great. But on that same coin, it's going to have to be the Chancellor's office and the Board of Regents and system staff working in tandem on those things so that we also have all that same messaging going out.
Okay.
So thanks for taking the leadership. I knew you weren't going to get out with nothing to do.
I don't know if you all remember in your meetings when you gave yourselves a 5 on something, we would have a little dance party on the Zoom. So I feel like maybe we should reinstitute the dance parties if you're interested. Okay, last one. Relationships with, did I get myself? Oh, I just repeated this one. This is the same thing. So I think we're done. Are those our major topics? Let me just stop sharing for a moment and go back and keep myself organized here. Thank you so much for your patience with the informal nature of this. I needed your participation and I appreciate you playing along. Yep, those are our 4 topics that we had come up with. So I would like to take these back and I will contact you each with just a suggestion, obviously going to the existing policy first. And then maybe I can build a template for you with some of those suggestions in them. And then I will send those out to the people who have volunteered so graciously to be the lead. And that will be just the basic implementation plan. And that should help you get have some sort of structure as you work, as you're already working so hard to improve some of these areas of performance. It should give you a little bit of accountability and structure to do that. Are we feeling good about where we are at this point?
I am.
Okay.
I don't know if that matters. I mean, I feel like we've made some great strides in changes that we all are aware need to be made. And I think under your direction with these team leaders, by the time we get to December for your report, we're going to see some great improvements there.
So one final question. I would maybe call this an implementation plan or a... What would you all like to call this? What does this mean for you? Anybody have an idea? What are we doing here? We're working on strategies for improving governance is basically what we're doing is, what would you like me to call this?
Regent Perkins, go ahead.
Oh, Madam Chair, if I may. A clear pathway, a strategic pathway. Or to quote President Helens, a lighted pathway.
Regent Brooks.
Thank you, Chair McAdoo. Regent Brooks, for the record, I was just going to offer that these are considerations of implementations.
Okay.
And maybe leave it as something as simple as that.
So I would like to put a word in there that the general public would understand that these are not student-centered strategies. This is separate from your strategic plan for student. I mean, obviously, we all fully recognize that everything you do impacts the students, but this is like your governance. Maybe I'm overthinking this. I don't know.
What was the term you used, Regent Carter, at the first of the conversation instead of problems?
Opportunities for improvement.
Yeah, opportunities for growth, yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yes, Chancellor.
Dale Urquiaga, for the record, at the risk of being the handbook wet blanket, the handbook says that what you're supposed to develop are strategies for improvement. So very close to Regent Carter's. So
strategies for improvement of, can you finish that sentence for me?
Not and keep my job.
Well, I think it would be improvement of the board. I mean, that's what this whole meeting is about.
Okay.
Board evaluation. There's nothing wrong with admitting that we need improvement. There is not a person in this room, of which I am the chief person, that doesn't need improvement. There's nothing wrong with that term, improve.
Okay.
And I don't think it paints a negative picture. I think it paints that we're trying to always get better and serve Nevadans better. So I'm going to ask us to not paint that in a negative light, please. Regent Boylan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Great presentation, ma'am, but I would say it's just ironing out the wrinkles since we've washed our, laundry in public. Now we need to just iron out those wrinkles. I like it. It's good.
I think that's a great analogy. Between the house and the doing of the laundry, I think we're all...
Yes, ma'am.
Clear. Yes, so thank you.
Just
thank
ironing you. Out the wrinkles.
Yes.
Good job. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Regent Boylan. Are there any other comments or any other information that you need from us? How about from Reno? Any comments or thoughts? I mean, I don't want me to be the only one that I'm happy. Thank you for being happy with me, Regent Boylan. I thought this was great because this gave us opportunity to look at ways to improve, and I know that we are going to be able to do that by December and in January and continuing on. I think it's been a very needed process, honestly, and I want to make sure that anybody that had an idea or statement to say gets to say it. So now's your time. I hear none. So thank you very much for the presentation, and the team chairs and leaders will look forward to working with you.
Thank you very much.
All right. Okay, we're going to move to item number 8,
New business. Boy, we just got a lot. Regent Carter, please.
I think we need an ad hoc committee to evaluate strategic initiatives and growth opportunities for the board.
All right. Did you get that, Mr. Kilroy? All right. Thank you. Regent Boylan?
Thank you, ma'am. It's just because it's new business. I think I've mentioned this before, and I picked it up from Regent Carter. We should have something like we've just done for the chancellor. We should have something like that for the chair of the board. We should have a whole committee, a whole, you know, deep down, dive in deep and see what kind of fish and things are swimming so we all know what are the responsibilities of the chair. Now, just an idea, and I, you know, cheated. I took it from him.
I think it's a good idea. I just want to be clear that you're saying that we need to look at the roles and responsibilities for the chair and vice chair of the board.
Yes, ma'am.
Is that what you said? I think it's a great idea.
Especially since we're going to have new people totally. We don't even know who's going to be. And I think anybody that's going to be the chair really doesn't understand how deep it is until you get into it.
I can assure you that's the truth.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much.
So, Mr. Kilroy, you got that new business? All right. Any other new business?
One for Regent Del
Carlo. Oh, 1 second, please, Regent Del Carlo.
Yes, I agree with my colleague there, Regent Boylan, but that goes to what I've asked in the past, is that we have a governance committee within the Board of Regents. That's where that would all fall under, because I think sometimes we do things based on personalities, not based on readiness for things. And there should be steps, I can't get into its new business, but let's just leave it at that, governance. We need a governance committee.
Thank you. Regent, was that you, Regent Arascata?
Yes, it was, Madam Chair.
Please go ahead.
Just a review of Title I, Section 20, Title I, Article 5, Section 25 of our complete Regent Handbook, which is the regular board self-evaluation. Just to review these numerous items in our Regent Handbook that have been and become outdated, I'd like to review these further in detail. Thank you much.
Thank you. Is there any other new business? Seeing none. I'm going to go back to one training piece, just as a reminder to all of us. In the January after an election year, we have trainings on a variety of things, open meeting law, ethics, and those will be happening as we're looking at that training component. And now we will move to agenda item number 9, public comment. Is there any public comment in Elko?
There is no public comment in Elko.
Thank you. Is there any public comment in Reno?
There is.
Okay, please go ahead. State your name and spell your last name, please. Hi, Dr. Downs.
Oh, thank you. Jeffrey Downs, D-O-W-N-S. I am a WC faculty member, NFA chapter president, and also a candidate for Board of Regents. I want to thank the board for working to pass this extension for the collective bargaining contract, and thank Dr. Dalby for his help in this too. So thank you, Q.
Thank you, Dr. Downs. Dr. Irvin?
Irvin, Nevada Faculty Alliance. Just continuing the discussion, particularly about training. You know, training for the board is very important, both for onboarding and ongoing training. Another board, state board that I attend, the PERS board, has at every monthly meeting, they have a one-hour education session because of the need for the board members to learn about all aspects of the pension system. So I'm not necessarily suggesting an hour at every meeting, but maybe you need more than that. I would like to list just a few additional training items that I think should be considered as you go through this process. And at the top of the list is academic freedom and shared governance in higher education. Higher education in America has excelled because it has been an enterprise built on the expertise of the teachers and the scholars with the responsibility for the institutions and the success of students. And having the board know how it fits into that structure is very important. And then several other items that aren't in any particular order, labor relations and collective bargaining, fiduciary duties as a member of the Board of Regents, best practices for boards of trustees in higher education at sort of a global level, structures of labor for faculty and staff and institutions of higher education. I think, you know, it's complicated, all the different kinds of instructors, lecturers, faculty members, tenured, non-tenured graduate assistants that we have. And I think training in that area would be important. Training on system and institutional budget and funding policies, best practices in executive searches and hiring, and best practices. No, I did that one already. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there other public comment in Reno? Seeing none, is there public comment in Las Vegas? Seeing none, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you for being here.